I don't normally, I'm saying this now, but I don't normally get sick necessarily. I wouldn't characterize myself as like being sick. And you guys probably know. I mean, we've sort of worked together for long enough where if I was really laid down, like, you guys would probably know that, you know, I'm out. I don't really get like that. Some days I'm doing good. Some days I'm not doing any good. And I just feel like my tummy hurts, I have a headache, whatever. You know, it's like that. And I'll be like, I'll feel better tomorrow. And today I didn't feel good. I couldn't figure it out. You know, I didn't eat anything different or that much of anything. I didn't have a big, like, weekend drinking or anything like that, which that sometimes throws me off. And then I remembered when I looked in the news journal this morning that the legislative session is starting. That's why I don't feel good. Before we get to that, I'm going to read a little bit of that, or at least summarize it. But I do want to read this from Carl's research, because this is the thing that was in my mind and probably like kind of like in the back of my mind. I knew that the legislative session was starting, and it made me physically ill. So this is from the first Carper administration, I believe.
Yep.
So this was 1 year in. 1 year into the first Carper gubernatorial administration, and this is from just a look at his first year. Business leaders haven't necessarily embraced Carper either. Robert L. Byrd, a business lobbyist, says they have trouble relating to Carper's preference for creating task forces rather than proposing policy. Byrd himself sits on 4 task forces. Quote, there is frustration. It's a different way of doing business, and it's not a business way of doing business, Byrd said. And I read that, and I'm like, did he graduate high school? Like, we're being run. And he's still around, right? That fat ass is still pulling his ass around Leg Hall.
I think he's easing his way out of lobbying.
He can't ease his way out of anywhere. Let's be very clear about that. Yeah, I'm sick of anybody.
His legacy is certainly left behind.
Along with a lot of candy wrappers. Am I right? Comrades and friends, hello. This is the Highlands Bunker Podcast. I hope we do have the medicine tonight, because as I said earlier, I need some fun. And who else to bring fun but the full crew, super producer Carl, Bill back from his secret mission. I'm just glad to have you guys in, so thank you so much.
Good evening.
So this is what I pulled up this morning. So here we go. Today is the 12th of January. What is her name? She's a new reporter. Montez, I guess.
Oh, Olivia. Name.
Olivia Montez. Yeah. And with an S, maybe perhaps Portuguese, Brazilian, we don't know. Politics. Marijuana hunting on Delaware's legislative agenda, the press room. So I guess they're going to actually have a press room now. This is your new Leg Hall reporter for the News Journal. Okay, that's good.
Yeah, I think I recognize the press room maybe from last year.
Did they do the press room last year? But who covered?
They've had some version of it. Well, was it Mandy Fries at all? Because she left.
She might have been a few years ago.
I can't think of her name. She had beautiful hair. She had incredible hair. I can't remember. Big
Sarah Gamard.
That's like maybe ten years ago.
Yeah.
Well, who was it last year?
I don't remember who it was last year, because it was Meredith Newman for a little bit, too.
Because,
yeah, that's the issue, is every time someone, like, learns enough to be a good reporter,
yes,
then that's when they shut
them
out.
Yeah, we just
Because, Mandy Fries, like, I remember when she first moved, and she did some tweet, it's like, what is this river? And it's like, the Brandywine River. And it's like, what's this? But then by the time she was, like, you know, a few months in, like, a year in, she was, like, doing really good stuff.
Yeah.
The thing is, the reporters,
and especially, like, working with people who are not from here now with the call, like Lisa, they might not know what the fuck's going on day one, but like they know they're because of their profession and their training, they're pretty quick to the get up.
Right.
You know, they're like, within 2 weeks, they're like, oh, this person, they know their nicknames, they know their bad, all that stuff. So anyway, I'm very interested to see the big stuff that the legislature is going to tackle. She even says something like, what does she say here? Ongoing week from January to June.
Well, I mean, hopefully something dealing with affordability, cost of living.
Sure, housing, maybe.
Like things that people are literally talking about every day.
Yeah, and you know, she says something like, this is looking to be another, you know, exciting leg calls, and I'm like, okay, that's you're trying a little too hard. So issue one. New penalties for using consuming marijuana in public spaces. I was like, okay, I consume marijuana in public spaces all the time.
You have for years.
That's right. I was a trailblazer, as they say. So, Eric Morrison sponsoring this bill. I thought when Wilmington, the city, decriminalized marijuana, they made it into a civil, but I guess that's not a statewide thing. So they're going to take all the criminal penalties away, and they're going to write you a ticket. FYI to all the Wilmington and state police officers, I have stacks of 50s. Fucking ticket me away, you pigs. But I like this. I can't be mad at the idea. Eric Morrison came up with a good idea. Let's make this tweak because we've legalized recreational marijuana. It was decriminalized before, and I think in Wilmington, it was already just a civil ticket, like a $50 ticket or $100 ticket. But okay, let's clean this up. Now that we've done this, we probably should have done it with the legalization, but we'll call that a cleanup, a good cleanup. Okay. All right, number two, potential primaries for special elections. We talked about this. Mara Gorman and our boy are co-sponsoring what basically is an administrative procedural rules change. Now, it was pretty big the last couple of years because we did have people going on to other things or having health problems or whatever. But it's procedural. So, yes, I like it. But, of course, it's bipartisan and procedural, so I don't see... Okay, that's fine.
I'm going to have to see a fiscal note.
Yeah, what's it gonna cost to do these things?
I've heard that's quite the impediment.
Yeah,
so.
Is that it? Okay. Number three. Now get this. Suspension of rules among majority. So the minority, that guy, the Zionist guy, Spiegelman, he wants to do a thing where you actually need 3/5 of the entire body to change the rules of. So again, it's a completely legislative procedural. Nobody gives a shit. Whether they do it or not. I mean, I guess. The Democratic leadership there sucks too. So I don't care what they do. So
I'm sure. Carl, correct me if I'm wrong. I think this certainly came to a head during the special session on reassessment.
I did not watch a single one of those sessions.
It was the full bodies were there, not the the.
Not the special hearings.
Not the special committees.
Not the series of special hearings.
Yeah.
No. Because I remember I was there as a spectator, and I remember I was always like, phew, they're arguing about like procedural bullshit. They're not, talking about
the 3/5 thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that was, it's been a thing that they care about for a while.
Right.
Because they'll always do it on June 30th.
Yes.
To suspend the rules. And like, it is silly, but also like, the rules are the rules, and the rules are inherently done or not done by a simple majority. Because if you pass a 3/5 thing and you don't like that, you can just pass another rule with a majority to get rid of it. So I haven't read the bill itself that they're talking about, but I'd be interested to see if it actually does anything, really. Because it's ultimately just like a thing you have to make an agreement on.
Yeah, so we have electoral procedure. The primary thing.
Right,
which, again, we're going to have to look at that fiscal note.
Yeah.
We have basically legislative procedure that literally, I can tell you, nobody other than people who, like, absolute sickos like us who follow this stuff give any shit about that.
Well, even know about it.
Or nobody even know. I didn't know about it until I just read it.
Yeah, nobody gives a shit about it.
Nobody gives a shit.
Apart from Jeff Spiegelman.
So here's the next one. Enshrining the right to hunt and fish. This is what is funny here, though.
Is it that says, not already a right?
Another constitutional amendment sponsored by Senator David Wilson would preserve individuals' right to fish, hunt, and trap wildlife in the first state. Now listen to this. Several other states, including Kentucky, Louisiana, and neighboring Virginia, have passed similar legislation. Neighboring Virginia? They don't neighbor Louisiana or Kentucky or Delaware, so who the fuck is
I mean, it's on the peninsula, if that's what they mean.
I'll tell you what. Susan, as we know, Nurse Susan is from the Eastern Shore on Maryland. This is basically Nurse Susan erasure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's not even from anywhere.
The famous Delaware city of Salisbury.
It's a gateway to Delmarva.
I mean, this is something for like rookie Olivia to build upon, I think.
Okay. Yeah. That's like
unless she meant it was neighboring Kentucky. Was that one of the states mentioned?
Yeah.
I would not include that in my article though. For a Delaware centric audience.
Come on, somebody's gonna see this and especially
I guess it does technically neighbor Kentucky.
Do we
on the
Oh yeah,
westernmost edge.
Yep.
Then why would you put Louisiana? When you say Louisiana,
I think that was just somebody should be doing copy editing that is not doing copy editing.
But this is it. But as Wilson specifies, quote, this is not a gun bill. Who cares? Quote, this is a bill that allows future generations to simply hunt, fish, and trap, he said. So I don't know why we don't have it now.
I guess there's certain limitations on what you can hunt when, obviously. I don't think this would get rid of that, presumably. Just combine this with the Green Amendment. Just make it all one thing.
I would like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
And you're going to need the second leg. Always need a second leg.
Yeah. Right? That's the most important thing.
In a second session. I'd like to see maybe getting rid of those orange posted signs.
Hmm.
That would work.
I think it, yeah.
So would you believe that's it? That's the four things.
Oh.
I mean, that's big stuff.
That's the four things.
For January only?
That's a good one, Bill. You got me there. You got my ass there, buddy. No, and again, to be honest with you, I don't know if I've heard of anything else that's really going on. I mean, is there another leg to the death penalty thing? They have to do a second leg, maybe?
Yes, but I think that's next year.
Oh, they can't even do it this year.
You got to do it because they already did it in the first. They did the first leg in the first leg of this session, yeah. So they have to do the second leg in the first or second leg of the next session. It's very simple.
This will be on the test, people.
Comrades and friends, we're going to be having a pop quiz tomorrow. Just write that down. So I guess my point is, going into this session, my outlook, my enthusiasm is at an all-time low. It's just a fact. I've begged the legislators who hate me so much, the immature, sniveling little fucking piggies down there that hate me so much. If you hate me so much, prove me wrong. Do something, as Bill suggests, that, you know, maybe help with affordability of housing or healthcare or fucking do anything.
Well, no, they are gutting the hospital review board.
That's right.
All right. You know where I heard that? I heard that at the legislative summit Spotlight Delaware did that was presented by Christiana Kerr.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I wonder if that had something to do with it. We see you guys out there presented by Christiana Kerr. We see you. So nothing. So they're going to make, as they did last year, they're going to make stuff worse. Speaking of making stuff worse, we have a couple of really, really interesting stories sort of in the on-deck circle, as it were. That are about the next wave of corporate stuff that's going to get shoved down our throats. You know, we had the 313. I think that was the Molus, and then last year we had, you know, just another absolute travesty of trampling all over shareholder rights because Elon Musk has a gun to our head, and we're babies. But we have a couple of you guys count on us for the best coverage on this particular issue. So we've been working this issue basically all year. So hopefully in the call in the next week or two, We're going to be publishing a couple of really, really cool stories that will sort of talk about what we might expect them to try to jam up our ass this go around. You know, it should be fun. I guess I'll just say that. So now that we've brought the party down, we're going to bring the party back up.
Yeah, we're starting with very low expectations.
We're starting with low expectations.
If you can look forward to the future, what else can you look forward to but the past?
You have to even think about the future, you have to look back to the past, forward to the past, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I might have mentioned this in here before. Both Bill and Carl, of course, because of his research, but Bill and Carl are both absolutely addicted to newspapers.com. You're absolutely... Listen, did you go through... Were you newspaper.com sick? Were you on
Oh, when I was away?
Yeah.
On an undisclosed private island? Yeah, I didn't think about it, though. I'm not that sick. But today, my first day back...
You were like, we're back in it, baby!
Rob needs some episode ideas.
So what we're going to do today is just kind of select some stories from the past that will kind of give us a little more perspective on the steaming heap of shit on the green in Dover that we refer to as Legislative Hall. Which one do you guys want to do first?
Well, I was thinking, do you want to go in maybe chronological order? Do you have anything earlier than January 72?
No, my earliest would be 78.
Okay.
January of 1900, the year of our Lord, 1972. This is two and a half years before the birth of your boy. Yeah, that's me. That's right.
So I got a little bit of a backstory here, and this is a little more premature. You know, we're kind of scrambling tonight to do a crew episode. Totally fine. So this is something I've been thinking about since, I guess, the Buxton episode. That's when I read the sort of lighthearted "There's 12 Buxtons," which is the real one.
Yeah, so that was the real
Dave Buxton's Buxton. Please stand up. Yeah. Please stand up. So the author of that kind of little funny piece in the News Journal, he may have been using a pseudonym at the time. Maybe he just matured and was going by William rather than Bill. But so there's this guy named Bill Tudor, who I've been looking at clips of on newspapers.com because I really like, you know, the cut of his jib. I think he's a good newspaper man. I came across a little clip recently where he got promoted on the editorial staff when he was 24. Like, you wouldn't see that happen to a newsman these days. But long story short, My understanding is that Mr. Tudor is still alive. I believe he'd be probably in his late 70s, early 80s now. Now, with all we've been talking about in 2025, can I give you, or would you guys like to guess around where he might live in the city of Wilmington? Somewhere that we're all intimately connected with.
He's in the Triangle.
He's Triangle adjacent, very much so.
Triangle adjacent.
Yeah.
He's still here.
He is still here as far as I know. Again, I'm not trying to make this,
You could walk over to his house.
Yeah. I'm not trying to make this too weird of a parasocial relationship type thing, but I'm sort of envisioning like a Finding Forrester-esque story where maybe we cross paths on Baynard Boulevard. He begrudgingly befriends me. He invites me into the house for like coffee or something. He's like,
where are they going to find Forrester?
Don't play ball in the house. And he's like, don't touch my papers. And,
you're in Scout Coffee Shop.
Yeah. Yep.
Right. And you take a call from Carl and you're like, hey, did you see this? We're doing this research. And you're like, yeah, I've read everything. We read the Buxton thing. This guy, Bill Tudor, he was really on one. And then you turn and he turns. And you meet your eyes, and you're like, I think that's Bill Tudor. And that's it. That's how it starts. And then he invites you over to his kitchen table.
Yeah.
He starts to fucking telling you about A.O. Plant.
Yeah.
He's going crazy. Buxton, he's like, you know, the whole thing.
I think he would be an amazing resource. I would, I'll just leave it at that. I think it would be cool to try and get to talk to him someday. But, and this is one of the articles that kind of sold me on it. I guess more of an editorial. But like I said, it's January 20-something, 1972. He's you know, in his late 20s here. The title of his editorial is "The Legislature Is," and then in parentheses, "Choose One: A, the True Voice of Democracy; B, a bunch of old men in Dover; C, asleep most of the time; or D, all of the above."
I love where this guy's going already.
The other night at a party, a newcomer to Delaware asked me what the General Assembly is good for. I was ashamed to admit that I didn't know, but promised to look it up as soon as I got back to the office. This is the result of my research. Newcomers to Delaware who wonder what the General Assembly is good for are people who don't understand that the high point of the legislative year is the annual legislators' night at Harrington Raceway. The low point of most years is passage of the state budget. Sometimes the low point of the year is the passage of the capital bond bill, except in years when it isn't passed at all.
Get there, ass!
Can I just
stop right now? Because you read the Buxton one, and now you're reading this one, and we can kind of see what this guy's sort of shtick is.
You can already see where he's going.
Because he did the same thing with the Buxton one. He was like, I'm going to try to explain how all of these guys, you know, he's like almost a conceit that I do, where I'm like the dumb guy. Whatever, and I'm gonna be like, I can't even explain it to my aunt or whatever.
Yeah.
But this kind of critique or this kind of satire, this kind of commentary, ran in the newspaper, in our hometown newspaper. You know, now people are ridiculed now. Maybe just me and us. But there's whatever you want to say about Spotlight Delaware. Whatever you want to say about WHYY or Delaware Public Media or even the News Journal or Cape Gazette, nobody is publishing this kind of stuff now. And, yeah, I think it's lost. One of the things that was lost the Delaware way. You can't – it's like you're not being – you can't criticize like this and make fun of people like this. It's sick.
Yeah, I guess like maybe Al Mazzetti would be one of the more – the last like kind of great one to do it.
I would think so.
Sort of maybe the next generation of Tudor here. All right. The low point of most years is passage of the state budget. Sometimes the low point of the year is the passage of the capital bond bill, except in years when it isn't passed at all, in which case not passing the bond bill may nudge out the Harrington Raceway Gala as the year's big event. The U.S. Senate has been characterized as the world's most exclusive and prestigious men's club. The Delaware General Assembly is about as exclusive as the Hardscrabble Lions Club. The Hardscrabble Lions Club has more prestige and probably does the state of Delaware more good.
Gotta use Hardscrabble too. Yeah, I love that.
It's just funny.
Susan and I will sometimes drive through that western part of Sussex, just because it's just interesting that it's there. Like you could be in fucking the middle of Indiana,
mm-hmm,
or anywhere, and it's just that close to the beach and to Philadelphia and all that. But it's something. It's really something.
It's next to Virginia.
It neighbors Virginia. Or West Virginia? I don't know.
The General Assembly has been criticized in the past for being under the control of a bunch of downstate farmers. The people doing the criticizing were usually professional politicians from Wilmington and do-gooders and chemists from Wilmington suburbs.
Do-gooders.
But now, you gotta ring the bell.
I like that the camera just moved over to highlight the bell for that. Yeah.
Now the General Assembly is in control of the professional politicians, the do-gooders, and the chemists. It has not improved measurably, although people will tell you that today's General Assembly is the best in Delaware's history. The people telling you this are usually do-gooders, professional politicians, or chemists, or Carl Stomberg. If not, they are people who have attended neither a session of the General Assembly nor a hanging. Members of the General Assembly like to say, usually with a conspiratorial air, that outsiders don't see the General Assembly at work because all the work of the General Assembly is done in committee. The reason they can say this and get away with it is that most committee meetings are closed. The open sessions of the Assembly are as exciting as watching a cricket match, except that the legislature has less to do with reality. Robert?
I feel like we should stop this right now. I just want Carl to put in the sound of that beautiful leather ball hitting that English willow. Thwack! First of all, it's more interesting than baseball. Sorry.
Certainly more complicated.
It's and I think that's kind of like, again, this is what Susan always says is, I need to know the complicated. I need to be the guy in the pub, right, in the United States, who's like, who knows all the laws of cricket, you know?
Yeah.
It's just fun. And I can be like, I played cricket and all that stuff. There's a cricket ball right there.
Yeah, no, that's cool. Yeah.
I'm defending it. Look.
You got to rough it up.
Here's the thing. One side. You got to get that reverse swing. You got to get late inning reverse swing. Wasi Akram. Toe crushers, baby. Okay, enough. It's fun. Look, cricket's fun.
It is designed that way. Last week, for example, occurred one of those events carefully designed to avoid all suggestions that the legislature has anything to do with the state of Delaware. It was called the Future of the State message and was presented by the governor, a former chemist named Russell W. Peterson. It is actually not Russell W. Peterson's fault that his Future of the State message could have been presented with as much relevance to a meeting of the East Elbow, Kansas 4-H Club. Future of the State messages, by tradition, are either about the glorious past or the glorious future. In either case, a fair percentage of the legislators fall asleep before the speech is completed. The reason they fall asleep is this. They're not running for governor. Furthermore, if they really care what the governor has to say about the future of the state, they read the advanced text handed to them by the governor's staff. General Assemblymen who are running for governor find the text of speech very important because they know a reporter will ask them for their reaction, and their reaction must include some reference to what the governor had to say. Otherwise, they feel, they will look like they're not doing their job. They stay awake during the speech because they are busy looking for reporters who will ask for their reactions. Besides listening to the governor two or three times a year and making inspection tours of the state's racetracks and the state fair, the legislators are expected to pass laws. Some of them approach this task with great distaste, convinced that all the laws the state will ever need were passed prior to 1911. Boom.
I was wondering what year he was going to pick. At least he picked something in the 20th century. I thought he was going to go back into the 19th century.
Anyway, reading laws before voting on them is almost as difficult as staying awake through the future of the state message. Other legislators, and fortunately for Delaware, they form a majority most of the time, believe that the state needs all the new laws they can pass. It helps, of course, if the laws have something to do with something the legislators understand, like racetracks, or involve doing favors for other legislators.
That's a big one.
These laws are usually called housekeeping measures, because the public is not expected to understand housekeeping measures. Laws that affect the public are called tax measures, because the legislature figures that people are only interested in taxes. Passing tax bills is one of the most difficult tasks the legislature faces, because each legislator must study tax bills carefully before voting. Do they? A legislator studies a tax bill, first of all,
to make sure... It's very complicated.
It's a little too complicated.
Look, it's complicated. We get to say, again, going back to the corporate bill that every year gets there. Look, I mean, who's to say what it does? We don't know. We'll just get Bill Chandler up here to make some vaguely sexist comments and fucking split.
I have a vaguely sexist comment coming.
Okay.
A legislator studies a tax bill, first of all, to make sure it will not hurt him or any of his friends. Then he must find out which political party the governor belongs to. So if the governor is a Republican, as Russell W. Peterson is, a Democratic legislator must decide whether the tax bill will hurt the governor or help him. If it will hurt the governor, the legislator votes for it. If it will help the governor, which is unlikely, the legislator votes against it. If the legislator should happen to be a Republican, his task is even more difficult, because he may feel a need to protect the party from the governor. He may feel it important to protect his own political future from the governor. He may, in rare cases, even feel compelled to protect the people from the governor. Or he may not care one way or the other, which means he does what the governor tells him to do.
Another classic that moves through. It's just like, look, again, I'm going to harp on this fucking corporate bill. I'm sorry, but that's exactly what happens. They're like, look, this is your job to do this.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we know you don't understand it. We know you're getting yelled at. We could explain it to you, but we basically lie. So just pull the trigger. I mean, let's be honest. That he's talking about 1972. I'm talking about what Senator Laura Sturgeon said to us in here. Look, right. They said we're going to go broke. It's our job to just vote for it. I don't know what it does. So, lest anyone think this is not applicable to our common day because they're not all men now. You know.
We used to pass them unanimously. Okay. A lot of people try to tell legislators what to do. These pressures the legislator must ignore for the good of the state because the people doing the pressuring, whether they be voters or do-gooders or editorial writers, all have access to grind. Whenever possible, the legislator makes up his own mind. If he cannot make up his own mind, he asks a lobbyist for advice. If a lobbyist is not immediately available, he will seek advice from the girl who hands out copies of the bills the legislator is voting on. That has the added advantage of giving the legislator an opportunity to look at her legs. By William G. Tudor, editorial writer. So yeah, a little vague sexism at the end, but otherwise,
well, it's like it's 1972.
I mean, to be fair, that is notable things that they still do today.
They still do.
Yeah, of all the things they still do today, that is also one of them. Yeah,
there's still talk to folks who've worked in the General Assembly, especially women and women of color, and ask what they experience from certain older male legislators.
Well, we were witness to something in Leg Hall just last year.
Oh yeah,
I was one of those, like, first of all, my vision's very bad. So I saw, people over there, and I wasn't really paying attention. But I saw, them there, and then they left, and Carl explained what happened. And I was like, Jesus fucking Christ. We're in the lobby of an office.
Yeah.
It was weird. Very weird stuff.
Oh, yes. Okay.
Do you remember?
Now, yeah.
Yeah.
This was recent.
Yeah.
This past year. Yeah. This session.
Yeah, the 25. Yeah, the last.
Yep.
Session, but yeah, just a weird, it's just a bad place.
Yeah, we had to ask somebody, be like, can you check on her to be like, is she okay? And she kind of laughed it off, but.
Yeah.
I mean, it's great.
And it was, yeah, it was just like it was sexual harassment, basically.
Oh, yeah,
blatant.
Up.
It was,
yeah,
and when I started to realize what, like, I guess, you know, I wasn't quick to the pickup, you know, like, I was like, oh, yeah, that's fucking weird.
Yeah, if I remember correctly, it was not a legislator.
No, it was not. If it was a legislator, I'd tell you who it is.
Yeah, it was older stuff.
Look, I love my audience, and if I see some legislators doing some bullshit, you can guarantee it's going right on the internet. I'm going to say it right through the microphone. But yeah, that whole the it's interesting that we sort of are looking at the sort of the gendered side of it, because again, this is operating what you just described. Is operating like you don't say racetrack, just say data center.
Yeah.
You know, don't say men, just say everybody. Because the women and the women of color and the men of color and the non-binary people and the this and the, all of them, they still all operate in the exact same way. And there are a few do-gooders. I still don't get why that's like how that became a thing. Yeah, like, I guess they mean the bleeding heart liberal, I guess.
Basically,
League of Women Voters.
The old way to say it was like...
The League of Women Voters, like the Louise Connors of the world.
So I was going to joke.
Indivisible's Highlands.
When you rang the bell earlier, like, Laura Sturgeon, like, popped up in bed. It's like... Yeah. I love Laura.
We love you, Laura.
Yes. The best.
Yeah, it's just like that. That's... It's just different... euphemisms for the same thing.
Yeah.
You know, it's just different. It's in a different sort of setting. And I'm not going to, you know, talk about what history is or isn't. We try to give you a lot of history in here because it definitely puts shit in perspective. And so, yeah, I mean, there's not much. You could make an easy sort of analogy to anything going on today in one of the little funny things that.
Yeah. No, it's 50 plus years ago. It's amazing how little shit has changed.
Yeah.
Like that. Well, first of all, that I still find that really funny. Like the sense of humor. But you're right. Replace racetrack, which was probably seen as a savior. It's like, we're gonna have one in each county. We're gonna allow people to gamble there. Like they.
It was around the 70s that they started. It might have been late 60s that they started doing the racetrack stuff to get extra revenue.
Right. Yeah. There you go.
And the lottery. That was the other big one that they added.
Yeah.
And now they don't even talk about taxes, really.
Yeah.
That's been, I mean, they were sort of forced to because of the reassessment. But, I mean, you can bring up, even just bringing up the Cuoco tax that we try to bring up every year. It just...
No, I don't know. Maybe this was obvious for some, but I kind of had the epiphany this past year that the state wants tax revenue to come from out-of-state sources, predominantly.
Yeah.
And that's, I was like, oh, no, duh. That's why they're so uncomfortable talking about like property taxes,
right,
reassessment. Why they had no problem talking about the decoupling legislation on, like,
right.
You know, right. So the corporations that, I guess, maintain their intellectual property rights here are able to do something now where we're able to tax them for it again. Something Trump eliminated, I think.
Right.
Right.
Because it's such a great idea to fund your state based on like arcane, esoteric corporate finance laws,
right,
that can just be anything be done with them.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, because as fast as you know, Brian Townsend can fucking change them, they can also go the other way. It's just a weird concept, but yeah. And I never looked at it that way until this happened. But that's it. It's like, yeah, this is a true, honest to God tax haven.
Yeah.
It's like if you live here and make money here, have your intellectual property here,
store your artwork here.
Yeah. I couldn't believe that. I mean, yeah, I couldn't believe that, but I mean, that's what's going to happen. This is a tax haven set up for, you know, what capital really does, which is not really make anything, but just like create value off of like intellectual property and like arts, mm-hmm, and like just stupid shit. And so, it's the operation is basically the same. We've hit fast forward, but you can definitely recognize the shenanigans that are going on. I also like that, you know, I think if we read something like that today, depending on the source or the context of it, you might find it like kind of hokey.
Mm-hmm.
But considering that it was in the regular legacy paper, and this was this guy's like regular shtick,
yeah,
it's actually very good.
Very good, especially when you like think back then. Like, he's writing it also to get a lot of angry letters to the editor, which is, that's also like a fun part to read of old newspapers. I don't know if you have fallen for this, Carl, at all, but
I dabble.
You dabble. Yeah.
I've dabbled. But I'm gonna do a deeper dive once I'm like done with the initial set of research, just to like get good quotes, because there's always some fun stuff in there.
So do you have an article ready?
I do. I was thinking of doing this one from 1978 about how like everybody's happy and working together again, but I was looking through it. It's not that fun. So we're gonna do one that is fun.
Yes.
Nice. Also legislative related.
Excellent.
From a character, a fun character, who we've not talked about much in the bunker, but Rob just mentioned earlier in this episode, Al O'Plant.
Al O'Plant. And he went by, and I remember growing up, you know, seeing his name in the newspaper sometimes, and he would do the AO.
AO.
He would do the first two initials, which I like that construction. You guys have probably figured that out.
Right.
That's how I, like, I write under that for the call. And I started doing that because I wrote something, I think when I got arrested at the Capitol, I wrote something for the News Journal that they published. Actually, Albright helped me edit it. It came out really nice. And I explained why, as a Delawarean, I went down and got arrested for, like, the first tax cut or whatever. But it just said Robert Vanilla, and then somebody asked my dad about it, and he was like, hey, like, I don't mind that, but, like, use your middle initial, because we have different middle initials. We're both Robert, right? But I didn't like the full name in the initial, so I just did the two, the R-E. But I love the A-O, the R-E, the W-C.
Mm-hmm.
That's just, I love it. So, yeah, so this is... do you want to explain who Al O'Plant is?
Yeah, so some background is Representative Al Plant was born in Arkansas in 1931, moved to Wilmington in the 50s, was basically like a rough and tumble labor guy. So he worked at the Chrysler plant and then got fired and claimed it was for racism and union busting. And then I believe started working for the city because he was like an AFSCME organizer for a little bit. Became the Wilmington NAACP Labor Committee Chair for like a decade. And then in 1974, he ran for State House and won and served in that seat almost completely uninterrupted from 1974 to 2000 when he passed away. And then Hazel Plant, his wife, replaced him until 2010 when she was primaried by Stephanie T. Bolden. So I believe it's basically the same area since then. It's moved around a little bit, but
74 was the birth of me.
Yeah.
So now we're up to my birth.
And so he did have one term in that time where he was not state representative, because in 1990 he was primaried by Rourke Moore, who was a more middle class black guy, who was basically allied with Carper when Carper was trying to kick the Danny Rapa people out of the party, and Al Plant sided with Danny Rapa. Not a good idea. Lost his election, but then came back 2 years later and beat Rourke Moore.
Rourke Moore. We got a lot of Rourke Moores running around still. Yeah.
But
you know what I'm talking about, too.
I think the most important context, though, about Al O. Plant is that the News Journal absolutely despised him. And I think sometimes they have good reasons, and sometimes they don't. And I think they probably have bad reasons more often than they have good reasons. Yeah. And I think as I read this, you'll begin to understand why. So this is People in the News. Al O. Plant, a voice. Does he talk for people or just for Plant? Governor Pierre S. DuPont IV delivered his annual State of the State address January 23rd. 5 days later, Representative Al O. Plant delivered his. He was the only one of the 62 legislators who did. But that doesn't surprise anyone who knows him. Plant, D. Wilmington, is at his best when he's under the glare of the television lights or behind microphones. And he seems to know it, for he calls more press conferences than any other politician in the state. Plant sees himself as a self-appointed spokesman of the peoples, a group he says consists of poor blacks, the unemployed, the elderly poor, welfare recipients, and the handicapped. And whether they like it or not, Plant seems to be the only politician in the state who's voicing their cause. Voice, of course, is the key word here. Many, friends, opponents, and mortal enemies, say that's all Plant does, talk. Now, there are rumblings that Plant's mouth is getting him in trouble. He has been criticized for relying on tactics that are called vicious, divisive, and self-serving. He's been called a demagogue grasping at straws to stay afloat. Plant admits he fires from the hip, but he also says he puts a spotlight on injustices that would otherwise be ignored. Plant, who is black, says he decided to give his own State of the State address because DuPont's was geared towards middle-class whites and big business. Plant charged DuPont with doing a lousy job of getting the state's affirmative action program moving and showing little concern for the poor.
That's facts. That's just facts.
Yeah. He's going to say a lot of things that are...
So far, so good. I'm just... When you were talking about, calling press conferences, all I can think about, because, you know, we've talked about this with certain people who have gone off the deep end, and they're now insane online, other politicians who... This guy would do a mean Instagram reel.
Yeah.
This guy would be out the alley. Yeah. He would be like...
He would be on 302 Steppas.
At AO Plant.
AO Plant.
You know, Oh, man. Yeah, he would be on 302 Steppas. He'd be everywhere.
Yeah. All right, let's see. This is a long article, so I'm going to jump around a little bit.
Did he give his State of the State, from his seat in, Hall?
It does not say.
Okay.
Did he call a press conference?
I assume he just did a press conference.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. It would be, again, he could have just, written it up. And sent it, like a pamphlet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course, so far, Got no beef with.
I got
his,
no beef. I like his constituency.
I love the way he's
wonderful.
Talking to people.
No one else really talks like that
I
anymore.
I like when people are like, "What's he really do? What do you do?"
Exactly.
Yeah, John Carney. What's he fucking do? He goes to the fucking meeting. He says what the fucking people tell him to say.
And he looks disappointed.
He looks disappointed all the time. And then whenever anything happens, he's like, "We'll do a task force. Just get somebody out of the stable. Get that ugly hag that ran the prisons. Put her in the fucking task force." He's not doing anything either. Nobody's doing anything. Fuck off.
All right, here we go. So a little bit of Al Plant backstory. He lived with his father in Chicago, then drifted to Detroit, where he got a job at an auto parts plant. In 1953, he married, and after a short time, he was drafted. He served in the Army Airborne Battalion and did a stint in Korea. In 1956, he was discharged from the service. A year later, he moved to Delaware and took a job at Chrysler's Newark assembly plant. Plant, an intransigent union organizer, was soon at odds with the Chrysler management. By 1959, he had worked up to chief shop steward in the paint department.
How can you put intransigent? Because yeah, he's supposed to be the labor management thing is supposed to be adversarial. That's the whole point.
And I know it's not technically owned by the DuPonts at this point because it's 1980. But like you can tell the editorial slant with even when they're not being like directly critical of him, you can just tell by the word choice.
Yeah, this big union organizing loudmouth.
Yeah. Like, who's not from here.
Good point. That's a great point.
He's not even. He didn't even. Where did he go to high school?
Where did he
not
go to high school?
Go to De La Warr.
I was hoping when. Because he was.
Well, I think we were all in the. He was in our class, right?
That's right.
He was in Detroit.
Hey,
right? He was in Detroit right around that time. I thought they were going to be like, there he befriended the prophet Elijah Muhammad.
Yeah. Right.
I was like, come on.
Here we go. In 1960, Chrysler fired Plant. The official reason given was insubordination. Plant, however, maintains that he was fired because he's black and because Chrysler wasn't happy with his union activities. He's been battling for 20 years to prove his firing was unjustified.
Like, you fired the loudmouth union organizer, the black guy?
Okay, so here we go. Direct criticisms here. When Plant isn't holding a press conference or representing the city's second legislative district in Dover, he's most likely to be found in Wilmington Mayor William T. McLaughlin's office. Besides collecting nearly $1,000 a year from the legislature, Plant earns $16,000 at the mayor's special assistant on community affairs. And by Plant's own admission, he's living better now than ever before in his life.
Okay.
If Plant is now financially secure, politically he may be less so. Recently there have been rumors in diverse elements of the black community that could lead to a primary challenge for Plant. Many people say they're tired of Plant's antics. And some of them are wondering if Plant's ego has made it impossible for him to seek solutions to the complex problems of the constituents he claims to represent.
There's no egomaniacs in politics, that's for sure. They don't exist. This was an anomaly.
Yeah. I should point out, he continued to win 4 more elections before he actually successfully got primaried, and then he immediately started winning again after losing that primary.
Vindicated.
Yeah.
Some people are saying he was fully vindicated.
So there's some stuff here about Wendell Howell, which you can read my WFT piece, who eventually he went to jail, I think also for tax evasion. Eventually he got put in jail. Oh, no, he was for official mismanagement of the school board and then for cocaine possession in the 80s. Which
was that even illegal?
It's the 80s, yeah.
Was he the one who racked up most of the Chancery Court penalties as well?
No, he was the school board president. So he was the one against the union.
Okay.
Plant lost much of his personal credibility by supporting Howell. When Howell was first indicted in December 1978, Plant maintained his friend was innocent. When Howell pleaded guilty, Plant said he had been framed. When Howell was given a jail term, Plant said the judge was a racist.
Look, you never fucking... You gotta stick with your boys.
It seemed that Plant was caught in a quagmire, and every time he tried to pull himself out, he sank a bit deeper. But credibility wasn't all Plant lost by backing Howell. A chunk of his power also disappeared when Howell was ousted. The Housing Authority is the only source of political patronage controlled by blacks in the state. The executive director controls jobs and oversees the agency's waiting list. About one half of Plant's district is made up by the urban poor, many of them public housing residents who need any clout they can get with the Housing Authority. So they're saying because Howell was like involved in the state Housing Authority and Plant was friends with him, now Howell isn't going to be able to give all the goodies to his poor urban black.
Yeah, he's able to give basically scraps to the poor people.
Yeah.
He's in charge. He's in charge of doling out the scraps. Yeah, it is interesting. It's like he doesn't do anything. He's an egomaniac. He works this other job because nobody double dips either around here. That's not a thing.
It's not a thing.
Never was a thing. This is a complete anomaly. This has never ever happened before.
So I think you'll like this next section. Plant seems to thrive on conflict and adversity. He says the only two men he's ever idolized are Muhammad Ali and the Reverend Martin Luther King.
The Reverend Jeremiah Wright.
Yeah. Oh, come on. I was hoping it was. Again, because the first one was so good. I'm like, Ali, you got to give me Malcolm X, bro. Oh, I can't.
Just beneath King's picture is a political cartoon depicting Plant... And Representative Casimir Junkyard, I've seen that name a million times. I have no idea how to pronounce it. In boxing gloves. The cartoon poked fun at a scuffle that took place between the two men in Legislative Hall last year. Neither was hurt. Plant quickly dismissed the altercation. It wasn't that much. To Plant's way of thinking,
that's
only...
That's what he said, it wasn't that much. That was his quote. Yeah. I love
that's
it.
That's awesome.
Because if there's anybody who's just dreamt of engaging in fisticuffs in Leg Hall, it's been me.
Yeah.
Because sometimes people need to be freaking straightened up.
Yeah. To Plant's way of thinking, only war surpasses politics and savagery. He sees himself surrounded by conspirators trying to unseat him. So he's adopted what he calls a foot-and-ass style of political warfare designed to intimidate his opponents and catapult himself to the forefront of the political scene. By his own admission, he will do anything within the limits of the law to destroy those who he believes to be his enemies. And this is Plant. There are conspiracies going on whenever you deal with the conventional system, Plant explains. I know there are some conspiracies to Plant around, too. I haven't always lived as good as I'm living now. I've been on welfare, and I know what it's like to be hungry. I've been fighting the system now for about 18 or 19 years. Folks been trying to get something on me that long, too. They can't stop me, though, because I'm going to keep my foot in somebody's ass as long as I think it's necessary. Like the old man say, there's a strange bird in the chicken yard now.
Notice what they did, too, and I'm surprised they gave the game away. So when they were talking about him having the other job, the $16,000 a year job with the city, they say, and he said he's never lived better. He's living so great now. So in that context, it seems like, oh, he's taking money. When actually, when you read the whole quote, he's just comparing himself to people on welfare, or homeless, or like, you know, or on benefits. And that the context that he said it in was completely different than the context they used it in. Just as an editor's note.
Yep. In many respects, Plant is a strange bird in the chicken yard. A maverick Democrat, Plant bucked the city machine when he was elected to the state legislature in 1974. Plant managed to eke out a 32-vote decision over the incumbent Amos McLooney in the bitterly contested election. The election was a defeat for city political boss Leo T. Marshall, who, much like...
Another Marshall L.
Matt Marshall is related to Cassandra Marshall.
Right.
All the Marshalls are related.
Take an L. Yeah. We actually count every time a Marshall takes an L, no matter who they are, it counts.
Yep. In retrospect, Plant's victory was unusual in another sense. His candidacy had the backing of Senator Herman Holloway Sr. and his son, Herman Holloway Jr. The senator had also challenged Marshall's bossism and was running without his support. In retaliation, Marshall chose Wendell Howell, to run against the senator. Howell was defeated 2-1 in the 1972 primary against Holloway and was also crushed the second time around. Thus, the stage was set for one of the most divisive political feuds ever in the city's black community. The cause of the rift is a matter of conjecture, but shortly after Plant was elected to office, he bolted from the Holloway camp and aligned himself with Howell. Plant launched a scathing attack on Holloway Jr. when he ran for the legislative seat in the 3rd District in 1976. Holloway Jr. was defeated, but the feud carried over into the 1978 race, which the younger Holloway won. And so then it's just like some various quotes of the two of them going at it. Plant called Holloway Jr. a crook and a poverty pimp. And then described
Herman
Holloway.
Again, history has proven him probably right on that one.
And then a Plant saying of Herman Holloway Sr., the old man is a lot foxier than his son. Junior just doesn't want to do things the honest way. It's just that pimp blood in him. If you're really going to be a community activist, then be for the peoples. Not yourself all the time. I'm strictly community-oriented and peoples-oriented. My slogan that I ran on at the time I won was AOP Plant. Always of the people. I'm not like a lot of the so-called community activists.
That's the handle. That's the name of the Instagram page is yes. Always of the people.
I'm not like a lot of these so-called community activists in this town that can't open their mouths for a variety of reasons. Like the old saying goes, they got a halt of the sugar tit, and now they got plums in their mouths.
Get in there, buddy. You know, I'm going to take this under advisement, take this as a meeting note.
Mm-hmm.
We may have to vote on renaming the Bunker Studio the Al O. Plant Memorial Studio. I love this guy.
I like it.
He's spitting fucking bars.
Sounds like quite a character.
Yeah, Holloway Jr. then jumps in. Al Plant came from nowhere to the height of his political career with the help of the organization that I'm affiliated with, says Holloway Jr. He would have never gotten in if we hadn't put him on the same ticket as the senator. We had to drag Al across the finish line using every trick we could. He still only managed to win the election with 32 votes. He's not good for the black community based on the way he attempts to address issues. He becomes so vindictive when you have disagreements with him that he lets his feeling turns into hate. and his hate sets him off to a point where he doesn't have any control over what he's doing. He'd rather yell than try to persuade people that he's right. Then he digs out a lot of dirt to try to discredit your character, which has nothing to do with the issue he raised in the first place. So, they're not friends with each other.
No, that doesn't seem like it.
Was this an article or an editorial?
This is an article.
Okay.
It's basically an editorial. Yeah.
We used to get this in the newspaper.
We used to get this.
Like, imagine
yeah, this is
the
so
newspaper.
Long. Like, there's
like,
a whole other page.
Imagine the newspaper
this.
Covering, I don't know. Like, so we covered it. The Ray Moore, Mimi Minor Brown blow up.
Dust up.
Dust up. Row, they would call it in the BBC. And we obviously covered it a little bit, not a lot, but we knew what was going on. We had, obviously, Ray in here to show solidarity with her. And, like, that would never be reported in the news now. Or it wouldn't be reported to this level of detail.
No.
Like, back and forth, allowing them to, like, jab back and forth at each other, talking about all of this stuff. You would, this stuff does not get... But the funny thing is it still happens. That's what I was resonating with me and the first story.
Right, right.
Is like, yes, everybody already does this, but it's fine now. Like, everybody double dips, but it's not like you can't even really use it as a criticism. So it doesn't even work in this context, really. Like, would anybody care if they said some legislator also was with the DOJ and a cop, and they're getting two pensions and a salary?
Well, nobody, they do. They do kind of pull the knives out once they leave, because didn't they get our pal Val for that? Like,
yeah,
very thing.
They got her ass afterwards.
Afterwards,
though, too.
So you got to leave first.
Yeah. So, but again, it's extremely, extremely interesting.
Yeah.
The way that whole thing was reported, you would never see that level of sort of like personal deep dive into this feud.
I mean, think about last year, how uncouth people found it that like there was the downstate television station reporting about Stell Parker Selby.
Right.
They're like, this is inappropriate.
How could you ask that? Well, we have a 6-month session and she hasn't shown up.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about that, but yeah, I think it is interesting that has been completely tamped out of the landscape. I mean, we do it, but you know, no legacy media or mass media is going to do it. That's why I said, like, whatever you want to say about Spotlight or WHYY or Delaware Public Media or whatever, the ones that have, you know, the people who are actually at least covering the news. Nobody's covering it like this. Nobody can do this. It's been the institutions of the Delaware way have somehow made it uncouth to talk about people like this, to criticize public figures in a democracy like this. So if anybody thinks what I'm doing is somehow like mean or weird or out of line, it isn't. What we're doing in here has a very long tradition. And we're going to continue to fucking do it. Sorry.
Yeah, so let's get back to our guy.
Yeah.
Not Sam guy.
No, that was later.
It's another guy.
Plant has often referred to Delaware as a plantation state. He bases this on the state's poor record in the fields of affirmative action and its effort to promote equality. Plant has used similar language to attack blacks who he claims have been co-opted by the system. In this case, the plantation boss is these big corporations, Plant explains. People like Irving Shapiro and the DuPonts own the plantation. White people don't just live on the plantation, they own it too. Then you have the house boy and the yard boy and the field boy. The house boy is the fellow that's close to the big boss. The house boy got it made, and he ain't going to let nobody see Mr. DuPont but him. And so then they're like, well, but then other people say that he's really the house boy because he works for the city.
Yeah, okay.
And then the example they use here.
Sure.
Plant also kept a low profile following the slaying of a mentally unstable black man by city policemen last November.
Hold on. So don't even get me started.
All right. So the killing should have been a natural for Plant's brand of fiery rhetoric. John H. Govins, 32, a Vietnam veteran, was shot in Plant's district. Eyewitnesses suggested the shooting was unnecessary. Plant knew the victim's family and was familiar with his history of mental illness. But Plant's relative silence led his detractors to speculate that he'd been told to shut up. Plant denies that he was muzzled. He said he deliberately steered clear of the marches and demonstrations after the shooting because he feared they would become violent. He says he didn't want to be associated with the dissent because it was led by Holloway Jr. and by Arthur Skinny Wilson, who he says were exploiting the issue to widen their support. Plant says he didn't want to help further the ambitions. David W. Singleton, the mayor's administrative assistant, calls Plant a general troubleshooter for the administration. He says much of Plant's job is handling residents' complaints and directing them to the proper city agency. But he also says there are times when the Plant functions as a mouthpiece for the city. After the Govan's shooting, Al was active in the community trying to serve in a rumor control function, Singleton says. He got on top of what word was out and let the community know about what specific information was available. He set things straight with the right information. And then Singleton says there's nothing unusual about Plant wearing two hats as a legislator and a city employee. He says that at one time, John Kiert, Plant, and the late Senator George F. Schlor all worked for the city.
George Schlor. Come on, these are made up.
And then a little bit more, yada yada. But yeah, to close this out here, regardless of his detractors, Plant says he's an effective leader. He points to his work in prison reform and welfare rights as his most notable achievements. I don't think there's a forthright individual in this city that would have a criticism of Plant, he says. The taxpayers get their money's worth out of Plant, and they get it twofold. They get it from my work in Dover, and they get it from my work in the city. What the state needs is a lot more Al Plants.
It's a great line.
End article.
Yeah.
And at fucking 33. The other thing that struck me is nobody would talk like that on the record anymore. That's been sort of like managed out of the process.
Talk like Muhammad Ali.
Yeah, but even like, obviously, like Kowalko spoke like in that on the record.
Yeah, yeah.
But they only spoke about Kowalko behind his back.
Yeah.
They only speak about each other behind their back, and nobody will step out of line, even if they'll tell you in private, because they know it'll just be made difficult for them, because that's just not done, whatever. That's how they hold, you know, how they hold power is actually managing this sort of gossip system. And so nobody would tell Carl Baker at Spotlight, would give a quote like that to respond to anything anybody said, because they're afraid. It's just not done anymore. But the fact of the matter is, we can all tell you sitting here, they talk like that about each other now. I'll tell you right now, like, there's these petty squabbles, and like, who we just talked about one a couple of weeks ago with Ray Krantz about how if you only donate $100, they don't, you know, it doesn't have to be reported really. It just tallied and aggregated, and you just keep it on the side. And how can politicians or people in the institutional power, they'll tell you, oh, you know, I'll send $99, you know, but I don't want my name involved. Like, you know, that's where we're at. We went from people speaking like that on the record to reporters about each other to giving $99 so your name's not on a report. Just to put it in stark, so in case anybody thinks like they're not part of it. If you ever only gave somebody $99 because so your name wouldn't show up on a campaign report, you're a fucking coward.
What if you gave $100 because you thought that was the one that got you on the report?
You just made an honest mistake. Because I was all excited to tell Ray.
I did the same thing.
That I did that. Did you do the same thing?
Yeah, yeah.
I was like, and I'm not a coward. I gave $100 and Ray's like, okay, I got some very bad news for you. For
you, you coward.
I should have asked Susan. Oh, man. Yeah, and I'm sorry. I know there's tons of people who I know who are generally, you know, decent, you know, working in the process somewhere with us somehow. Some of them are better than others. But they all do this. And, you know, I might like you. You might be my friend. But you got to stop doing shit like this. If you can't even stand up to have your name on a fucking campaign sheet that you gave a couple hundred bucks to somebody, if you can't even do that, we are fucked. Because I don't know if anybody noticed, but But there was some fucked up shit going on in Minneapolis. And other places as well, as a matter of fact. And and people have just died in ICE custody. So, as I've said to people before, I don't know if we're going to get out of this. I hope we do. I'm old enough where now it doesn't matter. But I hope we do, and I hope we can turn this around somehow. But we're not going to fucking turn it around if you think you're helping and you won't put your name on a fucking campaign report. Okay.
Aloe Plant.
AOP.
Hey, look, here's the thing. Al Plant would put his name on the campaign report.
Yeah. He'd hold a press conference about it.
He would.
Yep.
He'd be like, you know what? I should have held a press conference. And like, I gave $100. I thought that was the thing. But I'm going to give now another dollar so my name is on the report.
Does Plant have a landmark around town at all?
I don't think specifically. Okay. He might start working on that. But he doesn't have like a I'm statue sold. Or a plaque plant. Or anything.
Yeah. There you go.
Yeah.
There it is, folks.
Right. Yeah, interesting. Interesting guy, because, I mean, I don't think he was a full, you know, like a leftist or anything.
No.
But he definitely skewed to the left, and I spoke to, because his name had come up for me during the, when I was doing the research for the DSEA WFT stuff, because he was a union activist at that time, so he wasn't active in this particular strike, but I was like, oh yeah, I know that name. And so I asked a friend of the podcast who was around during that time about Aloe Plant and what he thought about him, and he's like, well, he was a crook, but at least his bullshit nonprofit actually did the thing that it was supposed to, unlike a lot of them.
There you go.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, if you want to, again, the double dipping, the double dealing. I mean, he obviously, like you said, like he wouldn't go out and protest the police murder because the other guys were protesting it. Like, I mean, that's shady shit. Like, again.
Yeah, we're not saying he's like, oh, we endorse everything that Al Plant
we just like the way he operated.
Yeah.
Without fear, without like.
But yeah, in the like
with
depths
some bravado.
Of.
With
like,
some,
with in a, dare I say, Kowalko-esque manner.
Yeah. Like by 1980, the whole like Delaware Way style of politics, that was the other one I was thinking of reading, was from 1978. Because like, first term DuPont administration is when this like new style of like, oh, we're all nice to each other. Because it used to be they would like. Slam each other's heads against like the pavement. Like 1950s legislative hall was a rough and tumble place.
Plant, the political cartoon about Plant was him getting into a little fisticuffs there.
And so like that was at this point like kind of an anachronism. So it's, you know, he was one of the last guys to do it like that, or one of the first guys to do it like that, depending on how you frame it.
Yeah, depending on how you look at it. But yeah, it looks like an anachronism because they've snuffed it out of the process. But again, the fact that it doesn't happen in public like that anymore, really, it was better when it did, actually, whatever it was, whether you think a guy's a crook or a crazy person or whatever, he was bad, this guy's, you know, they're all shady, but frankly, I think it was better when it was in the newspaper, and then everybody can make their own decision.
And they did. Every 2 years.
Every 2 years,
from 1990.
Every look. It worked.
Vindicated.
Yeah. People are saying that. Anyway. Folks, we do have a lot of stuff planned. The legislative session is starting. No matter how much we make fun of it, they still got to do it. It's the law, apparently. So we'll be back with you. Bill, thank you again for all you do.
This was a lot of fun.
Carl, thank you.
Enshrine the right to hunt.
Yeah, look, we want to trap.
And fish.
We want the right to trap. I want to trap squirrels in my back garden like you can't even believe. And I'm going to smoke weed out there too in the open.
I think it's perfect.
Right out in the open. And again, Carl, I'm so excited about your book, man, because all of the stuff that we're pulling from it is exceptionally good. So, until next time, folks, left is best.